But I remember thinking those few days, I was like, man, nothing else in my life matters if I'm not healthy. Literally nothing. The band, the music, any money I make, if something is dilapidating is going to happen to my body because of the way I've been treating it, from drinking or from sitting in the sun on Warped Tour all day, every day, or from whatever, like nothing else really matters. And that was a big point for me too, was going through that and just realizing like, hey man, like, I mean, it is true. Health is wealth. It doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank if your body's giving out on you.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Eat Green, Make Green podcast. This is Pat McCauley. My guest this week is the extremely talented Alan Ashby. Alan is the guitarist and one of the songwriters for the American rock band Of Mice and Men. If you're not familiar with Of Mice and Men, definitely go check them out. They just released a new album called Timeless, which I'll leave links to in the show notes. They're a metal rock band, so if you're into metal, you definitely already know who they are because they're massively successful and tour all over the world. Alan and I connected over the past few months. We have some mutual connections in the plant-based world, and I've just been following him on Instagram and am inspired by him and reached out, and he was gracious enough to connect and hop on the podcast here. So we talk all about Alan's path to becoming the guitarist of Mice and Men in his early 20s, what his life over the past decade has been like. Of Mice and Men is one of like the top touring bands in the world, meaning like they, in terms of like the amount of shows they do. So, you know, talking like 250 plus shows each year. So he's literally spent like a decade of his life on the road. So we talk about how life has changed from that to all that's happened with the pandemic and being at home more and that sort of thing. We talk about how he's shifted over the past decade from very much like a party touring lifestyle to now one very much focused on his wellness. We talk about the daily habits he has to keep himself healthy and well. We talk about why he went vegan a few years ago. What traveling the world has taught him, the importance of being open to learning in different perspectives. We talk all about his latest album, Timeless. And lastly, his foray into the plant-based investing world. Alan is an incredible dude, a humble dude for the incredible success he's had as a musician. And yeah, I just have huge respect for anybody that uses their platform and their very large platform like Alan has to promote, you know, pro health and pro planet and pro positive things. So I will let Alan tell the rest here. Follow him, follow Of Mice and Men, and check out the new album. Without further ado, the legendary Alan Ashby. Times have related is your currency. All right, Alan, welcome to the show, man. Pleasure to have you, number one, and thanks for taking the time. And just to give a little context, I think I started following you on Instagram within the last like 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
And so we had some mutual connections, and you post a lot of great like plant-based food and stuff. And yeah, man, just wanted to get the full story. Obviously, you have like a little tiny career going on
yeah
that I learned about. So yeah, pleasure to have you, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. I'm excited to be here, and likewise, I've been following you on Instagram, and you're a very inspirational person, so it's really cool to be here talking with you. But yeah, I play guitar in a metal band called Of Mice and Men, and I've been doing that since I was 19, and I'm 29 now, so about a decade pretty much. So yeah
man, so give me the pre Of Mice and Men, like, where are you originally from, what was kind of life growing up, and like when does music come into the picture?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in San Jose, California. My parents met at working at IBM in Cupertino. I'm like a Silicon Valley computer baby. I was brought, my parents loved music growing up. My dad was from Texas, so he would always watch like Stevie Ray Vaughan, like live DVDs, and he loved guitar players, singers, songwriters, Eric Clapton and Stevie Ray Vaughan and stuff. So I grew up watching a lot of just guitar players and stuff. And that had a big influence on me when I was a kid. And then when I got to be about, 11 or 12, my parents were like, hey, he wants to buy you an instrument. And my mom wanted to buy me a saxophone. And I was like, no, I want a guitar. So they got me a guitar. And it all started when I was like 12. I've been in love with music and playing guitar. And ever since, just haven't really stopped. I was learning how to compose music and program music for video games. That's what I really like. That was my sort of realistic goal, was to create music for video games. There's like a formula. If you're playing a video game and you walk into like a level, the music kicks in. And then if you're fighting a boss, the music gets more intense, and it's all built on loops. You start with like a loop that's like kind of calm, and then you add like layers until it gets to the most intense version. And there's a formula, if X happens in the game, Y music loop plays or whatever. So I went to college to learn that stuff. And then halfway through college, a buddy of mine who was doing photography for like bands that would come through the area introduced me to a guy who was in the band of Mice and Men. And he was like, we started writing music together. And he was like, hey, one of the guys is leaving the band. Do you want to come join the band with me? And I need college. And he was like, basically, do you want to go on tour and like travel the world and play music? And I was like, yeah, man, it's like, totally, let's go do it. And I just haven't looked back since. And I've been lucky and fortunate and blessed enough to have been able to turn it into a career. So that's kind of the rundown of my childhood right there.
I love it, man. And at what point, like what stage was of Mice and Men at when you kind of got the call to be a part of it? Were they big at the time, or?
In my mind, yes. Looking back, like retroactively, I don't think that they were big in terms of like a global scale of being able to do it for a job. When I joined the band was in a lot of debt and, not very well managed in terms of financials and management and stuff like that. But me being growing up in sort of the heavier, I guess you'd call it the scene, the hardcore, metalcore, whatever you called it. I definitely knew who they were. And to me, it was a no brainer. So they definitely, my first tour I did with them was in a tour bus. So I didn't even have to do a van tour or anything like that. So they were pretty well off when I joined.
Right. And what initially, so you mentioned like you were into kind of the metal scene prior.
Yeah.
In college and stuff. Like how did you like first get into kind of like the whole metal scene?
Oh man, just going to local shows. I loved writing music. So I had a MacBook when I was 14, I got my first MacBook, and I started learning GarageBand. And then when YouTube came around, I was watching YouTube. I would come home from school and I would just watch YouTube videos on how to write and record songs on a computer. And that basically became my whole sort of, out of me and all my friends who wanted to, make bands and play music and go to shows together, I was like the kid who knew how to record songs on a MacBook. I would have people from other bands hit me up and say, hey, we have a song, can you record it? And I'd say sure, and I'd show up with my MacBook and my little audio interface, and I'd try and record, and I'd write like keyboard drums on a little keyboard and stuff. So I was sort of the in the box laptop recording sort of guru of and that's sort of how I built those connections in that scene. And then we all just went to shows together and played shows together and yeah, sort of grassroots in that sort of aspect.
Yeah. So fast forward a decade and like I'm looking on Spotify and I know your music like loosely, but I'm admittedly not like a huge fan or follower. I'm just not like into that genre very much. But like, you know, millions and millions of like streams, obviously now you guys are super, super successful. And like, has it become over the past decade, like, do you pinch yourself that like you're here today?
Oh, every single day, man. Every single day. At some points I kind of feel bad. Like, how did I get so lucky to do this? Because as like a guitar player, I'm not very good. I'm not like a shredder. I'm not like, you know, there are lots of kids out there who don't do this for a career, who are way better at playing guitar than I am. And that's not to discredit myself, because, you know, I do put a lot of time and effort into creating songs and recording and structuring. I think of myself more as like an instrumental songwriter, but every single day I wake up when I don't have to go to work and realize how lucky I am, especially through this pandemic. You know, I mean, I've been in a good enough situation to not have to worry about looking for other work or anything like that. And that's, especially with COVID, it sort of really made me realize, you know, how lucky and how fortunate I am.
Yeah. Yeah. What has that sort of adjustment been like over the past year? Obviously, like, I don't know how many days a year prior you guys would be like on the road.
Oh man. So in 2014, I think we played that, like Rolling Stone put out an article of the top 10 touring bands, and like we were like fourth, right below the 1975. We had played like 297 shows out of the 365 days in the year. So the last 10 years of my life, I would say, have been on tour about somewhere between 8 to 10 months out of the year. Wow. So it has been a huge adjustment, but in a way it's been kind of nice to like just feel like, it's so weird because the world is not normal at all right now, but in a weird way, I feel kind of normal. Like I'm sitting at home, I go buy groceries. It's all this stuff that I didn't do before that, you know, people who don't travel for a living get to do. So I felt very like domestic, and like, it's been sort of like a weird sort of reset of like, oh, hey, like this is, you know, this is what being at home is like. So in a weird way, it's been kind of nice. Again, also because I don't have to look for other work. I've just been able to chill at home and basically do whatever I want, which doesn't hurt. But yeah, it's been kind of nice.
Yeah. And from like a business perspective as like a band, have you guys embraced any of like these digital things going on? Like I see like the Youp like digital shows, and like, have you embraced any kind of, I know you're on Twitch all the time and stuff, but
yeah. So we actually I just got off a meeting with our management and our record label, and we talk about this stuff every other week. We have a meeting and we talk about, you know, what it means, music moving into the digital realm, and you know, all this, it's stuff that we think about on a daily basis, and it's been expedited by COVID 100%. You know, everyone's throwing digital concerts, and now you got NFTs in the art space, and what do those mean? Are they pretentious? Are they not pretentious? Is it, you know, like there's all sorts of stuff going on at all times. And it is something that I feel like we have to be conscious of, but I tend to compartmentalize it in my brain. You know, it's like it's a separate little box that we have to worry about of being an actual musician. Like you know, there's the actual art of sitting and playing the physical instrument, but then also everyone's consuming our art in ones and zeros via Spotify. So in a sense, we are sort of digital artists. So it's definitely been something that we're very conscious of thinking of business-wise and how to approach that. And so we haven't done a digital concert. I feel like us personally in the band, every band is different and everyone's got their own things. Our band is our live show is very based on like crowd interaction, mosh pits and crowd surfing, and it's very chaotic and stuff, and I think the other members in the band, and myself included, have been sort of a little weirded out by throwing a digital concert, because we're just very used to the old school metal festival kind of vibe. And logistically putting together a virtual concert is hard work. It costs a lot of money and it takes a lot of planning and stuff. And we live in Southern California, so everything's been on sort of like heavy lockdown. So we've just been sort of chilling at home until things get a little better.
Yeah, totally. And when hopefully like shows are back, 6 to 8 months from now, and there's some like normalcy back and you're back playing those like mosh pit style shows, like, is there any element of like this digital sort of year that sped that portion of it up? Like, is there an element that will be in play going forward because of
that? Yeah, totally. We've been doing like band Twitch and stuff like that. And we've sort of realized like how slacking we are in terms of digital content. And now we're having all these meetings about moving forward, how we're going to do it. Because like I said, I feel like COVID, no matter what your business is, I feel like it's just expedited the sort of realization of digital content as a source of revenue, as a source of marketing, as a source of, you know, anything. Like, if you don't have digital content in today's day and age, you're missing out on a huge platform and a huge, you know, just visibility and stuff. And it's something that we, being on tour for the last 10 years, didn't think about, because we're at the shows, we're seeing the physical people there. We don't care if anyone's watching our YouTube or anything like that. Like, we were actually there living it. And so now we're sitting at home being like, oh man, we're not doing all this stuff that everyone else is doing. So it's definitely something we got to consider moving forward, for sure.
Yeah. Has it been difficult at all from like a personal standpoint? Obviously, like, if you're getting on the stage, like in those like high energy atmospheres, like 250 nights out of the year, and you get like that natural high and energy that comes with that, like, has the past year been tough without that stuff? I almost think of like, you know, when an athlete retires, right? And
yeah,
the bright
totally.
Lights aren't on them. Has that been difficult or different, or how have you kind of
talked about that? Yes and no. I've always felt like being able to play shows and stuff like that is just such a blessing, and we're so lucky that people even care and come to do that. Like I said, my whole thing is just sitting in front of a computer making music. For some reason, that's what I love to do. I feel like I've always thought to myself how interesting it would be to create sort of like the band The Gorillaz. They were like a digital band back in the day. They never actually, like, they went on tour, but like no one actually knew who they were. And it was sort of like I always thought how interesting it could be to create a band, like, you know, from your house in your room on your computer, and then never actually have to go and play shows or do anything like that. So I'm sort of weird in a weird way like that, where I'm happiest when I'm just sitting here with my music working on it. And not that it's the necessary evil, but if people like your music, you got to go and tour and play it for them. And I love doing it. And I definitely get that feeling of, you know, exhilaration and stuff when we play these live shows. But I've been perfectly happy just sitting here working on music and playing video games and stuff. It's actually been kind of surprising how okay with it I've been over the last year. It's surprising myself.
Yeah, cool. Cool. And during like those periods, like, I see you, you know, I see you on Instagram, you know, on the indoor rower and getting out for bike rides. And it seems like you treat yourself well to the best of your ability and all that. How have you balanced that over the years on tour? Like,
yeah,
have you kind of kept yourself in check? Like, with
so the first life? My early 20s, there was none of that going on. The first, from when I joined the band when I was 19 till I want to say I was about 24, 25, it was the opposite of that. It was drinking. It was drugs. It was smoking. It was, you know, partying. There was no thought to any of that. It was sort of just masking everything that was going on because it was a giant party all the time. And if I just, you know, drink some alcohol, then this next day will go just like the last day. And it was sort of a big blur in that sense. And then as I got older, you know, and it started affecting my health I became conscious, you know, of taking more conscious of taking care of my body and my brain and my mental health and stuff like that. You know, you can only drink every day for so long before it starts taking a toll, both on your insides and your brain. I reached a point, you know, I think we were actually in Boston. I think it was the hospital in, I think it was a show in Boston one night where I was drinking so much after the show, I started throwing up blood and I was like, yo, like this is not okay. And I went to the hospital the next day and they stuck a tube down my throat and the camera or whatever. And they came back and they made me wait. And the doctor comes back and he says, so how long have you been bulimic for? And I was like, I'm not bulimic. Like, what are you talking about? And he's like, well, the lining of your esophagus is so worn down from acidity, from throwing up so often, this is what people are bulimic. This is what they have. And I was like, oh man, like I've just been drinking and throwing up so much that I've literally worn down the protective coating of my esophagus just from throwing up all the time. And that was a big turning point for me where I realized, I was like, this is obviously not good for me. Like I got to stop drinking so much. And that was a huge turning point. I think I was like 20, 24 at that point where I was like, man, like something's got to change here.
yeah, totally. That's crazy. And what sort of habits now do you have like in your life on the day to day that kind of help you maintain that wellness?
You know, there's a lot of things. I feel like it's more of creating habits and being conscious of the things that you do without thinking that help you in the long term. Like, you know, just waking up and eating a healthy breakfast, like an organic breakfast that's like fruit, you know, and some granola or something like that. Doing an exercise, working out on the rowing machine, getting outside, getting some sunlight, going on a walk, you know, just little things that you can make habits of. That you don't necessarily like think about, that you just start doing, that have helped me a lot. A little bit of like, I've tried meditation and yoga and stuff and sort of more calming sort of things. I like going out to like Joshua Tree or going up to Los Angeles National Forest and just finding some quiet, you know. That's another thing that has been, I feel like, really beneficial for me, especially being on tour. You're not really conscious of how much audio pollution there is. You know, you go to sleep in a tour bus, there's an engine running, you wake up and you sound check, and then everyone comes in, there's a million people screaming, and then you go to bed at the end of the night and it's a tour bus and you're driving and there's just always sounds going on. And especially when you make music for a living, you forget about like how good silence can be and calmness and how much of a mental reset that can be. So I try and just be more conscious of the good habits that I do on a daily basis.
Yeah. And having been like, you know, a number of years, like wellness out the window and, you know, a few years, like where you're focusing on it, do you notice a difference in like your ability to show up and put on the best show? Like, did the alcohol and all that stuff bring that down, or is it just so much in your DNA that like you can go shine regardless?
You know, there's definitely some videos of some shows that I've played where I've had a bit too much to drink, and you can definitely tell. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't necessarily know if it affects like whether the performance is good or bad. For somebody else watching, but I can tell you that for me personally, just the mental clarity and basically just overall how I feel, my attitude towards life, it has totally 180'd. You know, I rarely drink anymore. I'll have wine and I'll have a beer with my buddies or whatever, but you know, it used to be a really bad problem. I don't think it really affects the performance as much as people might think.
Yeah. So we were chatting before this, fairly recent in the kind of vegan scene. What kind of prompted that? And also, like, what's the deal with, I feel like I know like a ton of like metal vegan dudes. Like,
yeah,
two worlds that don't seem like
exactly
coexist. What's the deal there? And like, and why'd you go that route yourself?
So I think for me, I was thinking about this because I knew that we were going to be chatting about this. And I was kind of thinking to myself, you know, I had to think for myself, like, what did make me? I've never really sat down and thought about it. And I don't want to feel like ashamed to say this, but I feel like a big thing for me was the convenience of the information about, you know, the meat and dairy industry has played a big part. I feel like for a lot of people my age, I was born in 91, you know, I grew up through the golden age of the internet and social media popping off. I had a MySpace, I had a Zynga account back in the day. And I think the first thing that I ever saw that had to do with veganism was like my friend posted a MySpace bulletin. I must have been like, you know, 16 or 17. And it was a video, you know, of like a slaughterhouse and just some terrible, terrible, terrible animal cruelty. And I remember thinking like it affected me in a way. I felt such visceral emotion from it. I was like, this is fucking horrible. Like, this is absolutely terrible. Like, I don't want to look at this, you know, and I closed it and I just went along with my day. You know, the more I saw it and the more I became aware of it, I realized that as I became more conscious of, if something is affecting you on such an emotional level, you shouldn't ever just push that away. If something is making you emotional, you should embrace that and figure out why. And, you know, why does this make me passionate? You know, it could be music, it could be veganism, it could be something, you know, like for me, music made me super emotional when I was younger. And I realized, hey, I love music. I love how music is stronger than a drug. You can play a sad song for someone and they'll feel sad. And I realized that. And I think as I grew up and grew older, I realized that, hey, I would see these things that were happening to these animals, and it made me livid. It made me outraged. I felt, you know, this visceral emotion, and it just hit a turning point where I was like, I can't just ignore this. You know, I can't just know that this is happening and just brush it aside. I need to embrace why I feel so strongly about this. And, you know, as Instagram and Twitter and everything else popped off, how easily information is spread, how easily people can talk and discuss ideas and stuff, it becomes harder and harder for corporations and industries of anything to sort of hide evil shit that they're doing. You know, it doesn't matter what, if it's human rights abuses, if it's animal rights abuses, if it's anything, people know nowadays because information is so easily spread. You know, when you're growing up, and when I'm 8 or 9 years old, the meat and dairy industry, there's no video being shared between people on the internet of what's actually going on. They're hiding behind it all. You know, they're getting the key. They don't want people to see that, you know? So I feel like the convenience of the spread of information for me, and I feel kind of ashamed saying that, like it didn't come from some other more philosophical way, but I truly think that was the starting point for me, was just physically seeing videos of, you know, what was going on, and then learning from there, you know, doing the research about, you know, deforestation and how much water it takes and how much land it takes and how much pollution it takes, and, you know, how even now as I get older and I'm more into like the financial side of things, how terrible of a business the meat and dairy industries are, how they're subsidized by governments and taxpayers' money. And it's basically taxpayers' money going towards deforestation. And just the whole thing is just an absolutely terrible industry that I can't feel good about, you know, contributing to.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So on kind of like the transition to a vegan lifestyle for yourself, like obviously like you discover this information, and like I have conversations on here all the time, and this is like a question I often ask is like, you got the information. Like, there's plenty of people out there with the information you just said, but they really struggle to actually put that to action in their daily life. So how were you able to, was it just like a snap of the fingers, like you don't want to contribute to it anymore? Or how has it been?
I was thinking about this too, because I was thinking about this exact same question. Like, what was the moment? It was gradual for me. Like I said, there were times where I would see it and I would just brush it off. And, you know, and I think back about that and I'm like, how could I have just done that? Like, what was my mindset? Where was I at in my life? And, you know, I have friends who aren't vegan, you know, and we have discussions and we get into arguments and stuff. And I think to myself, how can they know that this stuff is going on and still eat meat or eat dairy or whatever? And, you know, I grew up eating meat. I didn't think about it. It was just, I think traveling and touring has brought me to realize how much of a product of your environment you are. You know, you meet people all around the world and they eat this way or they believe in this religion or whatever. And it's all very based on how they grew up or where they are in the world and stuff like that. And I feel like it's getting better, but we've all just grown up eating meat and eating dairy and stuff. It was backed by the government. Here's the food pyramid. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's what your parents said to do. It's what my dad said to do. You got to eat your protein. You know, it was just very based on sort of maybe not scientific fact, more just like, this is how we grew up. This is how you should be. You know, you grew up here, so you should be a Christian. You grew up here, so you should be a, you know, this religion, or you should eat this way, or you should do this for a job because we think that this is what, how our children should grow up or whatever. So I think a lot of it has to do with just mindset and tradition and stuff like that. Yeah. It was gradual for me. You know, I stopped eating red meat first, and I was like vegetarian, pescatarian for about a year. And then after that, I stopped eating milk and eggs, and I would only eat, my last thing before I went full vegan was I would only eat wild caught fish. And then even that was like, you know, I started learning about, you know, overfishing and stuff like that. And in a more ethical sense, you know, I just don't want to hurt any living thing. Now I realize that. But for me, it was gradual. And I think to myself, you know, if it was gradual for me now that I'm fully vegan, like, put yourself in this other person's shoes. Like, I did eat meat, you know, so it's like, it's not crazy to me to think that somebody else could watch that stuff and just brush it aside the same way I did. Maybe they're not at the place in their mental journey to realize, like, hey, if this makes me emotional, I need to like not run away from that. You know, I feel like that's a lot of people don't really realize that, that you should embrace those things and really look into why you feel these certain ways and stuff like that. So I don't know. I'd love to hear what you talk to a lot of people about this, and I'm sure you have sort of a general consensus of I'd love to hear, like, what, if you have any sort of philosophies as to, you know,
I think it's definitely a lot of what you were saying with like traditions and kind of family and friends that, you know, embrace those kind of outdated traditions and, you know, things you grew up with. But I think kind of more so at its core, it's like, it's just the inability to change habit. You know, I mean, everybody knows you should get some exercise in every day, but like 80% of the population is overweight. So it's just like, they have the information. And obviously, like, we're talking about, like, you know, animal lives. And to me, that's like way more serious than like working out. Yeah. But I just think it's like it comes down to like a behavioral change type thing.
I think convenience is a huge thing too, especially in America. Like, I'm not trying to smack talk countries or anything, but convenience is a huge thing. And shout out to companies like Beyond Meat and stuff who are making it. I feel like as eating plant-based and vegan becomes more convenient, more of these more people who don't sit down and, like you say, then from they have the information, they just choose not to do it. These are people who do things based on convenience. You know, they'll eat a Beyond Burger if it's right there at McDonald's because they're at McDonald's anyway. But they're not going to go out of their way to do that. It's the same sort of, you know, mindset. And like I said, I feel like I'm very fortunate to have the mindset to realize like, hey, I don't ever want to be the guy who's like, this is how I've done it my whole life, so this is how I'm going to do it. Like, I want to be open to change if it's for, you know, a more sustainable future, if it's for my body in a more sustainable way, if it's for my mind in a more sustainable way. And I feel like I'm very fortunate to be able to even realize that that's what I want to do, because I feel like a lot of people don't, like you said, don't even take that step.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there is also an element of like, you know, we are sitting here, we both kind of have kind of outside the norm careers where white dudes in affluent cities. And I think like so much like of the population, like they're just trying to pay rent. Like they're just trying to get by. They're, you know, just trying to figure out how to get through today. And
exactly. Yeah.
It's really hard to get somebody like that to give a shit about what they are buying or consuming. Like they're just trying to survive and provide for their families and get to tomorrow. So I think
totally,
that's like a big,
totally, man. And that's why I'm trying to find that, tread that fine line where it's like, how outspoken should you be? And how, like you said, there are people like living like that, where it's like, I do have to sit down and realize, hey, I live in LA. It's really easy to be a vegan in LA. I can't turn around and yell at the world like, you should all be vegan, because there's people who live in towns where they, you know, the only thing they can buy is maybe a Beyond Meat patty at the local Kroger or whatever, right. Piggly Wiggly or wherever it is. So, you know, you're right. That is, it's a very nuanced, just how to talk about it with other people, you know, it's very nuanced.
Yeah, no doubt. So personally on the, what's it been, a year, a few years, like since you've been full vegan, what's it?
2018. So 3 years.
Nice. So what, if anything, has it done maybe from a health standpoint, or maybe from like a soul standpoint, if you will, like has anything changed for you?
Yeah. I mean, everything. I feel better about my body. I feel better about my mind. Like people always say, you know, I feel more clear minded. I feel better. And it's like, you always watch people saying this stuff. And like, even from before I was vegan, I would watch people say this and I'd be like, oh, they're just saying that, you know, to try to get people to switch over or whatever. But it really is true. I don't know how to explain it. Like, I feel like if every day you're eating a meal and you feel good about what you're eating, in those moments when you're doing that, your brain feels better, right? You feel good about it, as opposed to like, oh, I ate like shit this morning. Oh, I ate like shit for lunch. I ate like that living in that sort of like, oh, I'm constantly treating my body bad, isn't a good mental state to be in. And the more conscious I am of health and mental health and physical health, the more I realize how important it is to feel good mentally about what you're doing physically, you know, because they work together. And I don't want to live in a place where I'm feeling bad about how I'm treating my body and how I'm investing in industries that are absolutely destroying the planet and stuff like that. So it sort of put me in a more elevated mental headspace, I guess you could say. And then physically too, like it's crazy. You can go back and look at these pictures. Like I said, when I was not vegan, it's like I had all this like baby fat in my cheeks, you know, and like you can kind of tell like when, if somebody, by looking at someone, if they eat meat or not. And I had all this sort of just extra like
little pup. Fat.
Yeah. A little puff or whatever, you know, it's like, you can kind of see like how it affects your body and stuff. And I haven't mentioned this either. And something I want to talk about is this is a more selfish reason why is living in America, man, I do not want to be older and paying for freaking healthcare because of something I did to my body eating the wrong way. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to be 6 years old having coronary heart disease or some sort of cholesterol or some sort of, you know, brain dysfunction or something. And you can change that by investing a little bit more in how you eat right now. You know, I think for a long-term financials, I feel like eating a plant-based, a cleaner diet. This is my most selfish reasoning why is I don't want to have to pay for this stuff later.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, like I always talk about how like everybody's saving for retirement and they're, you know, doing their 401ks and they're, you know, trying to do right in kind of their financial life. And like one of the main reasons people go bankrupt in, you know, 60 and beyond is from medical bills.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like they save up all their life to get to this point where they can retire, but they haven't invested in their body and they haven't invested in themselves to actually like be able to enjoy that part of their life.
Health is wealth. And I know that, you know, this is your MO. So I had a couple of moles removed on my back that I had gotten tested for and they were potentially cancerous. And I remember feeling like those few days before they actually got removed and they were like, I got the all clear that it hadn't spread or whatever. I've got these huge scars on my back from them. But I remember thinking those few days, I was like, man, nothing else in my life matters if I'm not healthy. Literally nothing. The band, the music, any money I make, if something is dilapidating is going to happen to my body because of the way I've been treating it from drinking or from sitting in the sun on Warp Tour all day, every day, or from whatever, like nothing else really matters. And that was a big point for me too, was going through that and just realizing like, hey man, like, it is true. Health is wealth. It doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank if your body's giving out on you. Like,
yeah, 100%, man. I love the quote, a healthy man has 1,000 problems, a sick man has one.
Yeah, wow, yeah.
Love that. So, man, you mentioned, obviously, you've traveled the world, like, way more than kind of the average person.
I think we actually even travel the world more than bands that are actually, like, huge, because, like, we've done a tour with a band like Linkin Park, right? And they only have to go to Europe once a year. And that's their cash cow. You know what I'm saying? We're not a huge band like that. So the metal scene is a lot bigger in Europe. So I remember in 2017, I flew from LAX to London Heathrow like 9 times. It was like instant. So I think we actually even travel more than some of these huge artists who you think like people would think travel the world. Like, I think we actually travel even more than them.
So you mentioned from that, you mentioned a little bit on the food side, but what are maybe some other takeaways that the average person doesn't get from like a life perspective point of view from seeing so many different cultures and ways of life? What are maybe some other takeaways that you might want to share?
To be honest, I think traveling with the band has really given me, being able to travel and experience different cultures is one of the things that I think I'm most thankful for of who I am today as a human being, like shaping my brain, shaping how I treat other people, how I learn, how I want to experience things, just traveling and seeing how different people are and realizing that it sort of made me jaded in a way where I've just realized that anytime anybody says like, this is the way I think things should be, it's just because they're a product of their environment. You say that because you were born here and you have done this, or you've done this for your whole life. Somebody somewhere else will say something totally different and believe in it 100%. And it doesn't mean either of you are right or wrong or whatever, you know, you're just, people are different. So in a lot of places there's, especially with eating meat and stuff, it's a lot more ingrained into the culture and into the, I did a guitar tour, and I have a signature guitar with this company called ESP, and the guitar centers in China bought like 1,000 models of my signature guitar. So I had to go do like a little press tour in China, man. And that was like insane to me. Like that was in 2018. So I'd just gone fully vegan, and like I had a tour guide there who was like, come on, I'll take you to the meat markets and like all this stuff. And I was like, I don't want to go here. Like, I don't want to do this stuff. And like, to them, it was just so like, so normal, so regular. And to me, I'm like, this is like my hell. Like, I don't want to see this stuff. Like, you know? So I think it's just traveling and stuff. It really opens your eyes to just like, you know, how different people are and just how different traditions are and stuff like that. I have been very blessed to eat at some of the best vegan restaurants in the world, though.
Give us some of the best ones you've had.
So I've actually thought about like I could start like a YouTube channel or something. You know, I truly don't think that there's, with the amount of traveling that the band does and the amount of vegan restaurants I go to, I'm not trying to sound conceited, but I truly think I'm one of the people on the planet who might have been to the most like diverse vegan restaurants. Like, I've been to vegan restaurants in Berlin, London, Japan, Tokyo, like everywhere you can name. I've looked up what's the best vegan restaurant here, and I've been there and I've tried it. So that's like a really fun thing for me to do. So I've gotten to try like a lot of good stuff. London has got an amazing vegan scene. Berlin has got an amazing vegan scene. Basically any major metropolis, you know, any sort of big city has got a big vegan scene. It's just every time I go out, there's more and more, which is really, really exciting and really makes me feel good. And it's cool to go and experience and stuff.
Do you have any that stand out over the rest?
There's one in Berlin called Soy, and they do like Asian style sort of, what do you call, like sharing plates, I don't know what the Asian word for tapas would be. But they do like platters and stuff where they just bring it out and you all just put it on your plate or whatever. So there's a restaurant in Berlin called Soy, and man, they made these like dumplings, and they had like these little rice cake thingies, and they had like their like beef and broccoli or whatever. And it was the vibe of the actual restaurant, the atmosphere. It was sort of like a, like when you go into like a, what is like a hibachi grill, and you all sit around a table and you like interact with people that you don't know, but they're all vegan. Right. And it was really cool in that sense. Also Blossom in New York City is one of my favorites. I don't know if you've ever been there. It's sort of like, it's really like kind of hole in the wall restaurant, but they do like a seitan piccata, which is like absolutely amazing. Plant Food and Wine, by Matthew Kenny here in LA. I'm a huge Matthew Kenny fan. He's got a bunch of restaurants here in LA that are all amazing. He just opened up Sestina Pasta in Culver City, which I've yet to try, but it looks super amazing. When we're in the Netherlands, there's a place called V Burger, which is like a burger chain that does all sorts of veggie burgers, any kind of burger you can imagine. V Burger does some pretty crazy burgers, man. Europe does like what they normally put on their burgers. They're very like mayo heavy, and like they'll put like sprouts on there and all this crazy stuff. So yeah. V Burger is very cool. And then there was another one, and I'm trying to remember where it was. So Phil, the other guitar player in our band, he's vegan too for a couple of years now. So me and him go on like vegan restaurant dates when we're in these in these different cities. And then there was another one I'm trying to remember. I can't remember the name of it, but yeah, I mean, there's so many that I haven't named that I've been to that I would have to go back and like look on my Instagram archives or whatever that I've posted. But basically anytime we're in a city, I find what's the good vegan restaurant. I either get it delivered or I go and I try it. Actually, it's what I spend a lot of my money on.
I love it. If you had to pick a city other than LA anywhere in the world, where would you live?
Ooh, this is a good question, man. I mean, I've always been a huge fan of New York City. I just feel like it's like the city of the world, you know, so much culture, so much art, so much just innovation and stuff going on. Outside of America, if it wasn't New York City, I love Berlin, and I also love the Netherlands. Anywhere in the, I love cannabis, so I would very easily live in a place like Amsterdam or The Hague or what's the tech capital of the Netherlands? Eindhoven. I would live in Eindhoven. But also Tokyo, man. I love Tokyo. Mm. Tokyo is like, people always ask me, they're like, out of all the places you tour, what's the craziest place that you've been? That's like, you know, the general standard question. And I always tell people, you know, going to Europe is like going into the past. They've got all these castles and cool architecture and stuff. Going to Tokyo is like going to the future. You can go to a vegan restaurant and get served vegan sushi by a robot. You know, like it's pretty crazy stuff going on in Tokyo. So I always have a lot of fun when I'm in Tokyo. And I'm a huge fan of like a very dystopian cyberpunk aesthetic in like a weird way. Like I love like just imagining it's the like world.
A lot of Japan's like a video game.
Kind yeah,
of.
Exactly. I have this weird aside. I mean, I love video games, but like I've always been very intrigued by like what people think a dystopian future would look like. And I'm very intrigued by that kind of stuff. And Tokyo sort of is the model city for that. So I love Tokyo. But also I would live in London. You know, I love cities.
Yeah.
I would live in a city and then go, you know, outside the city when I want to and then come back. You know, I love people exchanging art and ideas and cultures and vegan food, you know, and food innovation usually takes place in major cities and stuff. So
totally, totally. Nice, man. So tell me about the latest album. It's only three or four songs, right?
Yeah. So we're trying, the band's trying a new thing where, you know, the rock and metal world, I feel like is a bit dated in terms of how music is released compared to, you know, pop and hip hop and DJs these days where they just drop singles, you know, and it's like featuring five different, you got Nicki Minaj and right. the guy from Maroon 5 and it's produced by Marshmello, you know, and right, it's all
and
this,
everybody blows it up together.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we're trying to figure out a way where we can release more music at a rapider rate. And so we're trying to basically break it down into smaller records where it's like, hey, here's a record with three songs. Here's a record with sort of EPs and stuff like that. And it's been going well. Our Spotify numbers have grown exponentially at a rate faster than when we did, you know, a record every other year and stuff like that. So I think that people are just more ready for that kind of stuff, you know, less attention span. It's always what's next, what's next, what's next. We got to put out music, have merch come out with the music all the time. I feel like I want to be at a point where our band's just putting out music all year. And that's just a thing. Like no one cares, you know, it's just like, oh, they have new music coming out at any given point, and then they'll go on tour and play shows and stuff. As a musician too, as a songwriter, something that I thought was interesting is you got these TikTokers, right, who are huge now, who have started venturing into music. One of the most famous chicks, Addison Rae, just put out a single, right? She's like, oh, I'm a singer now. And she put out a single. And a normal pop formula song is like verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, done. Right. Her song is 2 minutes and it's verse, chorus, end of the song. Like that's it. Like don't even worry about a bridge. Don't even worry about the last minute of the song. But you get all these kids who are listening to this and they don't know better. That is the definition of a song. You know, it's like stuff is changing and it's becoming more rapid and less, you know, a little bit more ADHD. And we want to be conscious of not sort of, you know, discrediting, like we want to try to find the fine line between that, you know what I'm saying? Between how music is consumed today and how we think we should release music. So yeah, we just put out an EP that has three songs and we got another EP coming out with three more songs probably in another month or two. And then we'll just see how it goes. We just signed with a new record label too. So they're very willing to work with us in terms of how we release our music. So we just said, hey, let's give this a shot. And it's been going well.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I know, like, totally different worlds podcasting, but like it's all about like the consistency, whether you're on YouTube or you're on freaking Instagram or whatever. It's just like, the consistency. And then, yeah, like maintaining, how do you like maintain the level of your art while kind of taking advantage of that, like the like algorithms of today of like,
exactly,
you just get more views and more streams when you are consistent.
If you're trying to grow, consistency is the key. If you're somebody like Metallica, who's plateaued, or you're Joe Rogan, you can put out your episode and everyone's like, oh my God, here's the new episode, you know, and that's it. And then who cares? You know what I'm saying? But if you're continuing to grow, like our band, we're trying to grow more. I agree. Consistency is the key. You have to put out content that makes people excited, that keeps people in tune to your channel or your whatever it is, your right. business or whatever. And I think us as a band are definitely still trying to grow. And so I think that we have to sort of pivot into a more, like you said, consistency based model of releasing content, no matter what that is, whether it's music or podcasts or you're an artist or whatever.
Yeah, right. And is it you primarily writing the songs?
I do a lot of the song. We all write songs together on Zoom, but I do a lot of the instrumental skeletons. You know, I like to write what I think is a full song, sans vocals, and then bring it to the guys. And then they usually are like, oh, you know, we should change this part or this part or whatever. And the other guys do write whole songs of their own as well. And we come back to, we all come and share it on Zoom or whatever. But I do think that I do it a bit more than the other guys. It's what I do all day. I play video games and I work on music.
I love it, man. And in general, is it like can you wake up one day and write a song, or do you generally take like months to write a song?
You know, it's so weird, man. After 10 years of doing this, I'm still trying to figure out exactly like what my creative schedule is and how, what affects it and what doesn't. So, and there was a period of time where I was like, oh, every day after I go on a big hike, I feel super creative, you know? And then that sort of stopped being creative, it stopped working. And then it was like, oh, every day I take a, there was a point where I was like, every day I take a multi-complex B vitamin right before I go to sleep. I wake up and I feel like there's all these different things that I was trying to figure out, like how it affects me. And I still don't know. Some days I just wake up and, like, for instance, the past week, every day at like midnight, I've just been super flooded with inspiration. So like the past week, I've been staying up till like 4 a.m. working on music from like midnight till 4 a.m. And I've probably written like 3 or 4 songs in the last week. And I just have no idea why. It just sort of spills out. And I try and capture that while that is sort of happening. And then, you know, next week, I might just not feel anything for a week. And again, not know why that is. And just sort of, I'm trying to learn how to just roll with it, how to just realize sort of the creative flow. I think I've just realized that I don't really have any control over it. I don't know where it comes from. I don't know if it's a brain thing. I don't know. Every morning I try and wake up and be productive and at least attempt, you know, to go and write a song or work on something, do something that'll make me productive. But some days are just easier and the workflow is just a lot better than others. And I really don't know why.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned cannabis. Is that something that helps creatively, do you think?
Oh yeah. So yeah. I was diagnosed with ADHD when I was like 9 years old. I took Ritalin and Wellbutrin and then Adderall, all through my grade school, not realizing that it was basically just like pharmaceutical meth. And then as an adult, I was like, I don't want to be on this medication anymore. I watched all these documentaries about big pharmaceuticals and did my own research and just realized that I didn't want that to be a part of my daily, you know, diet was taking these medications. I wanted to find a more natural way. And, you know, now that I'm an adult, I talk about it in a way more like scientific medical sense, but I definitely started using cannabis when I was like a kid, but now that I'm an adult, I definitely realize how much it helps me just like slow down my brain and sort of like focus on things and not have to take, you know, a freaking Adderall or a Wellbutrin or a Ritalin when you're trying to work on something and not get distracted. So yeah, it's definitely been like it's definitely been a big help for me creatively and just in terms of focusing and not being so scatterbrained and stuff. It just slows everything down. You know, I get sort of zoomed in on one thing and nothing else kind of matters for while I'm working on that. I'm a huge cannabis, huge proponent of medical cannabis for sure.
Yeah. And outside of the band and outside of, you know, the video games, like, is there anything else in your life right now that you're working on or pursuing or anything like that?
So, I mean, I'm trying to learn as much about vegan investing as I can. A mutual friend, Sebastiano, I've been watching a lot of his videos and doing a lot of research on him and like Blue Horizon and stuff like that. And I truly feel like me being plant-based and being a vegan has sort of meshed with me trying to figure out like financial goals for my future. And I feel like there is a huge opportunity in terms of investing in vegan products and stuff. I got in on Beyond Meat when it IPO'd. You know, I'm a huge Beyond Meat fan, and I feel like what they have been doing with marketing and accessibility and, like I said, convenience is like a huge, I truly feel like ethics aside in terms of business and financials and stuff, that is going to play a huge part in helping a majority of the population eat a more plant-based diet is convenience and having big companies like that be able to put their products and whatever. I know it's still processed and stuff like that, but you know, it's going the right way in terms of, you know, just major products in grocery stores and stuff like that. I love Eat Just. They do the Just Egg, and they also have Good Meat, which is learning. They're researching and doing like cell lab grown meat based off of cells and stuff. They've had like two different technologies. One is like cell grown lab based meat, and then another one is like fermentation.
Right.
So I'm learning about all that stuff, and I'm, you know, it all seems very dystopian, you know, and futuristic, which is another reason why I'm so like drawn to it in a weird way. It's like sort of imagining this world where nobody eats meat that's, you know, designated towards animal cruelty. Instead, it's all grown in a lab, which is just as dystopian and weird and will throw just as many people off. You know what I'm saying? Like, that, who wants to eat something that's grown in a lab? Like, that just sounds weird, like right off the bat. But, all this stuff is very interesting to me, and just the technologies and the business aspect of moving the food industry towards a more sustainable and more conscious just way of doing things. I feel like there's a huge opportunity for like me just being me to find companies that I believe in and sort of like being a retail investor and sort of just like doing that. I'm pretty sure Just Egg is ramping up to do an IPO and stuff like that. But also spending my money on like vegan restaurants and like mom and pop vegan shops and vegan restaurants and stuff like that. And just being conscious of where and how I spend my money and invest my money. And so since I've been sitting home during COVID, I feel like a lot of people too have been really, you know, worried about like, oh man, like, job security. If COVID has taught us anything, it's that there is no real job security, like aside from like you investing in yourself, whatever that is, if it's you doing a podcast or if it's, you know, the way you eat or anything, like investing in yourself is the best thing that you can do. So a lot of people are sitting at home realizing like, how can I better invest my money? And that's where I was at the beginning of the pandemic, was like, oh man, like I can't play shows for, you know, a couple of years, like how am I going to make money? And I started researching investing and stuff like that. Like maybe there was some money I could put into like some stocks or, you know, like this and that. And that's when I started learning about Sebastiano and like all that stuff and investing in plant-based food spaces and stuff like that. So that's something I'm really trying to sort of learn and get into. I'm really not there yet. You know, I'm I'm a novice, so I'm still learning. But in the future, that's something that I would like to envision for myself, is being able to invest in either people or companies or anything that has to do with a more plant-based, sustainable vision of a food industry in the future.
Yeah, man, I love that. And I'm in a similar place very much over the past few years, learning that whole world. And you certainly, as you probably know, you found the goat.
Yeah,
plant-based investing.
Dude, he just sent me like 30 bottles of wine and like 30 boxes of pasta. And like, he was like, thank you so much. I was like, my dude, thank you. You don't even know. I'm like sitting at home watching YouTube videos about you and stuff like that. So he's just an amazing guy. And he's been like wildly successful investor and all the, you know, and aside from that, just all his ethics and everything he stands for and the boards of whatever that he serves on, and his sort of sphere of influence is just very inspiring, you know? And so he's been a big inspiration for me in terms of like, obviously I'm not as business savvy or anything like that, but I really think he's very inspirational. And in the future, I would like to somehow invest in some sort of plant-based business or product or something.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, and to ditto that, very inspirational to me as well. And you know, we have a project that we're working on together, and you know, just since like the day he's got involved, it's like gone, you know, to the moon, and hopefully we'll continue to go to the moon. And and what's really cool is like, it's such a good space to be in, because we just know as a world we have to go that way. Like, there's other forces at play that, like, we have to shift to eat
totally.
That way.
Totally.
You know,
I mean,
it's like,
well, I've watched a couple of his interviews where he breaks it down for people like me to understand, where it's like basically just how, like, even if you take the ethics out of it, just how unsustainable the business is, and how much extra stuff goes into transportation and government subsidizing and growing food for livestock and just all these things that you can skip over by replacing it with plant-based stuff. You know, you can just grow a plant-based substitute and forget about all this other stuff that's costing all this money and destroying the environment, just from a purely business aspect. And I feel like as history has shown, any business or industry that realizes, hey, we can cut out all these costs, they're going to go gravitate towards that anyway. So I feel like it's a very, I feel like it's, what's the word here? I have a very positive outlook towards stuff becoming more plant-based and stuff like that.
Yeah, totally. And like the consumer that consumes meat, you know, despite of where it comes from. So like, it doesn't matter if it's grown in a, you know, brewery, like, you know, setting, or it comes from, you know, a slaughterhouse. Like, the end consumer that is consuming that product at McDonald's or wherever, like, they don't give a shit anyway. And
yeah,
if you're Tyson or one of these big players, it's like, oh, there's this way that I can make real meat with, you know, 1/100th of the land.
Yeah, exactly.
1/100th of the resources, and, you know, less inputs, and I can bang it out on a, you know, larger scale for half the cost. It's like, it just makes sense.
Exactly. So finding those technologies and those companies, I feel like is sort of what I envision for, you know, how I want to spend my time, you know, investing or studying and just learning about this stuff. You know, it's something I care about and I'm passionate about, and I'm still figuring out, you know, my place and my journey and how I go about it and stuff like that. But yeah, man, I agree with all that.
I love it, man. I love like the, just whether it's the vegan stuff or like the investing stuff, like just your openness to be open to learning and new ways of doing things. And like, I feel like, you know, a lot of people, you know, would benefit very much from that just general approach to life, you know?
Yeah, totally. I had some, like I said, my whole dad's side of the family was from Texas, and a lot of them were very Southern. So growing up, I've had a lot of relatives who have been very sort of shown me in their old age what I kind of don't want to be, you know, like not trying to like talk smack on any of my family members, but like, I never want to be an old dude who's like, I do things this way because this is how they do them where I live and I'm right. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't ever want to, I always want to be open to learning and considering other people's, you know, thoughts and be open to changing my ways if it's in a way that benefits other human beings or animals or the planet or anything like that. Just because I like the taste of bacon doesn't mean I should keep eating bacon. I don't ever want to be that guy.
Yeah, I love it, man. So to somebody listening, and we'll wrap up here in the next 2-3 minutes here, but to somebody listening, that is maybe you 8 years ago, and they're maybe in kind of like a tough spot health-wise, maybe mental health-wise, maybe, you know, haven't really put the pieces together, and are just looking to either lead a more conscious life or lead a healthier life. What would you say to those people?
I would say get some cannabis and watch all the vegan documentaries that you can find, because that's what I did. And it really opened my eyes to a lot of this stuff. And then after you watch those documentaries, don't just trust those documentaries, go do your own research. And really the science is out there. And, you know, another problem is people believing in science or whatever, but you know, what you eat really does affect your brain, first of all, and then your body following that. And it's investing in yourself and your health and a clear state of mind and a healthier body is step one for any other goals you have in your life. If you have any other goals, none of that matters if you're not treating your body and you're not conscious, being conscious about making good decisions for yourself and for the environment and stuff like that.
I love it, man. Well said. Well, before I hit you with one more, just want to thank you, dude. This has been awesome. And like you, obviously being somebody who, is very much, you know, a public figure and, well known, and the fact that you, you know, lead the lifestyle you lead and are really trying to kind of lead a conscious life and show others kind of with your platform that they can do that, man. I just like salute you for your path, not only your success as a musician.
Dude, same to you. Same to you, man. Seriously. You're thanks, inspirational, man. Seriously. All the fitness stuff and your whole MO it's very inspirational. I gotta step up my game. I gotta start working out more for sure.
I love it, man. Well, next time I'm out west, out your way,
Or vice versa.
Hopefully, a hike or something.
Hopefully, when touring comes back, you know, we'll have a show in Boston. We can go grab some good food or something.
Love it, man. Well, hopefully, mine and Sebastiano's spot will be open by then. Here.
Wow. So, yeah, that'd be awesome.
We'll bring you by 100%.
Very cool.
Love it, man. So last word to you. Whatever you want to leave people with, and we'll sign off.
I'm gonna leave people with. Go check out Of Mice and Men's new EP, Timeless, out now, and stay tuned for more music from the band if you're into metal and like heavier music and stuff. And just thank you for having me, dude. This has been awesome. It's been a pleasure to meet you, and hopefully we can meet in real life one day soon.
No doubt, man. And at Alan Ashby and at Of Mice and Men pretty much everywhere, right?
Yeah, at Alan Ashby and then at OM and M.
Cool. Love it, man. Thank you.
Yeah, man.